tyranny, forged by freedom. That's what made us the greatest nation this world has known. We must resurrect that spirit to preserve liberty for ourselves and our posterity. This is Revolution's Revival. And now, your host, the cigar-smoking, politically incorrect, patriot of the hour, Caleb Shoemate.
The number of people who receive a positive income from working. Those people who were kept in employment would have a higher income, but let me look at it in a different way. Look at it from an overall point of view. The higher minimum wage will lead to people being unemployed. I think everybody will agree on that. All people say is, oh well, the number would be small, and that's offset by the advantage of those who are still employed. However, by decreasing the number employed, do you increase or decrease the total pie? Do you have more to distribute to everybody in the country if more people are employed or if fewer people are employed? Obviously, you have more to distribute if more people are employed. They produce more. These low-wage people who are driven into unemployment by a rise in the minimum wage don't produce what they otherwise would have produced. So the total pie is smaller. Now, how can that on net be an advantage? There's a great deal of nonsense talked about the minimum wage. If raising the minimum wage from $4.25 to $5.15 is a good idea, why not to $10? Why are you so mean and nasty that you don't want people to have $10 now? It's countered by saying, oh, well, a little is good, but a lot would be bad. Now, I don't understand the logic of that. If a lot is bad, then there's a little that's bad. It's all in the same direction. It doesn't change direction. And the people who are employed at the minimum wage today are predominantly teenagers, secondary earners, people who are working part-time. It's a very small fraction of the population that's employed at the low wage. Why do we have a minimum wage? It's very easy to see. The trade unions want to reduce the amount of competition. We have a minimum wage for the same reason we have tariffs, an attempt to reduce competition. And that interest is concentrated, politically powerful. The interest of these poor suckers at the bottom who are going to lose their jobs, they don't have much political power. They can't counter it. And by using this high-sounding language, the trade union people get people like you, who have the best of intentions, to support their special interest.
That was Milton Friedman in 1996 talking about the negative effects of the minimum wage laws. I'm your host, Caleb Shoemate, and I am tickled to death today to talk about the fact that it doesn't seem like Joe Biden is going to get his $15 minimum wage hike, which is one of his key campaign promises. They were trying to sneak that in on the COVID relief bill that I believe is $1.9 trillion is what it would be in total. But they were trying to sneak in a $15 minimum wage hike in that bill. And it doesn't look like Mr. Biden's going to get it. Minimum wage is very, very bad economic policy, and I want to dive into an aspect that I don't believe that you're going to hear very often. It's very important. Not only is it bad economic policy, but the origins of the minimum wage and minimum wage laws are very racist, and they have their origins in eugenics. This is something that is not discussed often enough because we often hear that we must raise the minimum wage so that no one has a wage that they can't live off of. A living wage is a term that you'll hear thrown around by progressive activists and politicians all the time. But in fact, what does the minimum wage do? Where are the roots of the minimum wage? And as you'll see in the course of this episode, the minimum wage was never a good thing. The minimum wage was designed and put into place to deprive blacks, the disabled, people that were considered mentally incompetent. It was designed so that they would rely totally on the power of the state, that they would rely on the state for their very existence. Now, if that's not evil, I don't know what is. I mean, that just slaps you in the face. Now, you may have just heard me and thought to yourself, Caleb, you're nuts. Come off it with all those conspiracy theories. Oh, really? Well, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the progressive era with that racist Woodrow Wilson. Any day that I get to hate on Woodrow Wilson for being an evil bastard, and that's putting it nicely, any day that I get to hate on him and tarnish his evil, hateful, diabolical legacy, I will do so. So allow me to read to you a section from a very, very good book written by Glenn Beck in 2016 called Liars, How Progressives Exploit Our Fears for Power and Control. He said, and I quote, Wilson's firm belief in the Anglo-Saxon superiority led him to embrace one of the most disgusting notions of our time, eugenics. He believed that the human race could be improved through selective breeding. In 1907, Wilson supported Indiana legislation mandating the compulsory sterilization of criminals and the mentally retarded, the nation's first eugenics law. After becoming governor of New Jersey, he wasted little time implementing similar legislation there, proudly signing into law a bill calling for the compulsory sterilization of the feeble-minded, including imbeciles, idiots, and morons, epileptics, and other defectives. Fortunately, other people with more sense prevailed, and the bill was quickly overturned by the New Jersey Supreme Court. This overt disdain for whole classes of people was pretty typical stuff in the Wilson-era progressives. But many eugenic laws were less obvious. Take the minimum wage, for example. Royal Meeker, a Princeton economist and Wilson's Commissioner of Labor Statistics, explained how easily economics can be used for human engineering. A quote, it is much better to enact a minimum wage law, even if it deprives the unfortunate of work. Better that the state should support the inefficient wholly and prevent the multiplication of the breed than to subsidize incompetence and thrift, enabling them to bring forth more of their kind. There you have it, folks. More of their kind. This is what progressives think of minorities. This is what progressives think of blacks, Latinos, the disabled. Insert any minority group you want. Nothing has changed, and they will use anything they can to exercise more control and grab more power, to use it as a club to bludgeon the people to death. Nothing has changed. This is the roots of progressivism, and ultimately this is where progressivism will lead you, to eugenics, to the state saying, okay, who gets to live and who gets to die? Who gets to eat? Who does not? When I read that, it floored me. It still continues to baffle me to this day. The audacity of government, of the state, to determine who gets to live and who gets to die, and to use economics. It's more than dollars and cents here, people. It's people's lives. And it disgusts me that they would do this to the American people. Am I surprised? Absolutely not. Progressives have been at this for a long, long time. And you see, the problem with socialists and where socialists fundamentally fail is that they don't understand that government will never effectively be able to determine the price of someone's labor. You see, the value of someone's labor is not determined by the amount of time or effort they put into it, but only the amount that the consumer is willing to pay. Government can never effectively set prices. That's where they err. And enacting a minimum wage law and enacting price floors effectively makes it illegal for an employer to hire someone who is at the bottom end so they can work their way up. If an employer determines, I don't know, let's just set a rate of $12. Let's say $12. If an employer determines that, I don't know, let's just throw out a number. Say $12 an hour. If an employer decides that well, this person does good work. I think I'm going to hire him for $12 an hour. But then government comes in and says, well, no, you can't hire him. It has to be for $15. Then the employer has to make the decision. Do I want to hire this person for $15 an hour? Or do I want to keep the employees I have? Now, that leaves the business owner with a decision that he has to make. And ultimately, less people have jobs. More jobs lead to more economic growth. That's just the way it works. And if the employer has to hire less people because he can't afford it, because let's face it, business is not a charity case. Now, I'm all for private charity, but the business owner has to make decisions. Do I cut corners here because I can't hire as many employees because the government says I have to hire them at $15 an hour? So what happens? Less people are employed, less jobs are created, so less wealth overall. Job creation leads to wealth creation, which leads to excess, which leads to more money in the economy, period. So I don't understand what these people want. Well, actually I do. It's what I said before. They want total government dependency. They want to deprive the people they don't like of work. And are we really surprised by this? We know Joe Biden's a racist. And I don't use those words lightly. The whole progressive ideology is racist. We can look at Biden's history with a crime bill and how it's disproportionately affected blacks. So he's just following in the good old steps of Woodrow Wilson and FDR and LBJ, these horrible, horrible people who have done horrible racist things with the welfare state and the great society. So he's just keeping up the legacy. He's keeping the legacy alive of tyranny, of treading on the individuals who the government doesn't see fit to live. And it makes me sick. It disgusts me. A matter of fact, I want to play for you one more clip by Milton Friedman where he articulates the same idea that minimum wage has always been put in place to keep minorities down. Matter of fact, he says it's the worst thing that could ever happen to black people in particular. Listen to this because it'll just blow your mind.
But the programs that are labeled as being for the poor, for the needy, almost always have effects exactly the opposite of those which their well-intentioned sponsors intend them to have.
As an example, what are you referring to?
Let me give you a very simple example. Take the minimum wage law. It's well-meaning sponsors. There are always, in these cases, two groups of sponsors. There are the well-meaning sponsors, and there are the special interests who are using the well-meaning sponsors as front men. You almost always, when you have bad programs, have an unholy coalition of the do-gooders on the one hand and the special interests on the other. The minimum wage law is as clear a case as you could want. The special interests are, of course, the trade unions, the monopolistic craft trade unions in particular. The do-gooders believe that by passing a law saying that nobody shall get less than $2 an hour or $2.50 an hour or whatever the minimum wage is, you are helping poor people who need the money. You are doing nothing of the kind. What you are doing is to assure that people whose skills are not sufficient to justify that kind of a wage will be unemployed. It is no accident that the teenage unemployment rate, the unemployment rate among teenagers in this country, is over twice as high as the overall unemployment rate. It's no accident that that was not always the case. Until the 1950s, when the minimum wage law, wage rate was raised very drastically, very quickly, teenage unemployment was higher than ordinary unemployment. Because, of course, the teenagers are the ones who are just coming into the labor market. They're searching and finding jobs, and it's understandable that on the average they would have they'd be unemployed now. But it was nothing like the extraordinary level it has now reached. It's close to 20%. Why? Because the minimum wage law is most properly described as a law saying employers must discriminate against people who have low skills. That's what the law says. The law says, here's a man who has a skill which would justify a wage rate of $1.50, $2 an hour. You can't, and you may not employ him. It's illegal. Because you have to, if you employ him, you have to pay him $2.50. Well, what's the result? To employ him at $2.50 is to engage in charity. Now, there's nothing wrong with charity. But most employers are not in a position where they can engage in that kind of charity. Thus, the consequences of minimum wage rates have been almost wholly bad, to increase unemployment and to increase poverty. Moreover,
the effects have been concentrated on the groups that the do-gooders would most like to help. The people who have been hurt most by minimum wage laws are the blacks. I have often said that the most anti-Negro law on the books of this land is the minimum wage law. And so I think the real answer to your question is that you must not judge a bottle solely by its label. You have to look at what's inside and see what the law or the measure produces.
If one looked at the label, though, and perhaps one of those government regulations that you would look askance at is that we look at labels. If one looked at the label and identified the objective of minimum wages, are there no positive, legitimate objectives achieved by minimum wage?
None whatsoever. In my opinion, there's absolutely no positive objective achieved by minimum wages. Its real purpose is to reduce competition for the trade unions and make it easier for them to maintain the wages of their privileged members higher than the others.
There are few labels that I'm willing to place on myself in this life. But when it comes to economics and it comes to politics, I will proudly put on the capitalist label. I am proudly capitalist. Because capitalism has led to the most success that the world has ever seen. It's lifted more people out of poverty than the world has ever seen. Poverty is at an all-time low thanks to capitalism. And what do these people want to do in government? They want to interfere with that. That they've been meddling with it for a long time, and the minimum wage is just another example. I'll give progressives credit where credit is due. A lot of times they'll call out these big corporations. They'll call out the special interests that Milton Friedman talked about. But then their perceived solution to the problems is more government intervention. That's like taking a hole and saying, oh, well, it's not big enough with a shovel, let's take a bulldozer to it. So that's the problem. The prescribed solutions, oftentimes, my friends, are worse than the problems themselves. I mean, we've been listening to a lot of Friedman today. I believe it was Milton Friedman himself who said the only thing worse than a government problem is a government solution to that problem. And so that's what you see with minimum wage laws. They say, well, oh, the prices are horrible. You know, if only we could raise the wage rate a little bit, it would help the employee. But don't buy it. It's a smoke and mirrors game. As we've seen, it's all about control. It's not about helping those in need. It's not about creating more wealth. It's all about control. Because if you rely on government, everything that you need, everything that you desire comes from government, then government becomes your god. And ultimately, that's what these statists want. The state is their god. Don't buy into it, my friends. It's a bunch of hogwash. And it really just breaks my heart to see how many good people have been led astray because, or perhaps it's the failure of the public school system, or as I call it, the government indoctrination camps, to teach these people economics. They're not complicated concepts. And people have been led astray because they've been ignorant. Educate yourself, friends. Do not let these people play you for fools. If we care about those in need, we would take away government regulation, which always makes problems worse. If we care about those that are hurting, instead of COVID relief and this bullshit, we would let them go back to work so they can feed their families. This is not about helping those in need, the minimum wage or this COVID relief bill. This is about control. It's always been about control. That's progressives' ultimate goal. They want control over all society. They want government to be God. Don't allow yourselves to be played for idiots. I know you guys are smarter than this. There's a reason why you listen to people like myself. I try to teach to the A students here. Please, if you didn't know this history, please take this episode and share it with your friends. I want to educate these people who do not know, who have been manipulated for far too long. It's time for the blinders to come off. It's time to wake up. And it's time to stop being played for fools. That's what these people think we are. They think we're fools. Well, it's time to show them who's in power. It's time to take the power back that we gave them that was never theirs to begin with. And it's time that we rise up as a people. It is time that we show them that we are the masters of our own destiny. And that government does not get to pick the winners and losers. It is time that we recognize who we are, who we have been, and where we are going. It is time to rise up, to dust ourselves off, and to be the people we are called to be. Until the next time, I've been your host, Caleb Shoemate, and this has been another episode of Revolution's Revival. I'll see you soon.